Yes, a very good morning to you. How you doing? Sunday morning, 11 o'clock exactly. It is here in the UK, that is. In the Northwest, a beautiful morning here, the 27th of September. Sunday morning, meaning Sunday View. We're going to take a look through the newspapers now, you and me, and listen to one or two clips from the mid-morning or early morning talk shows as well. And if you'd like to comment or make a contribution, do so by tweeting me. I look forward to reading you this morning.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, welcome, and I hope your weekend is going well. I had a pretty lively weekend this weekend for a change. Spent Friday with Paul Ripley of Fab Radio, the impresario himself, on a photo shoot in Manchester. Had a great time. Love Paul, top man. Doing that for the new website and for social media. So it's been a good weekend. And, well, there's never a dull moment, really. Thanks for the very rude comments about some of the photographs uploaded after said photo shoot on Friday. Somebody said I have a head like a dropped pie. Yes, thank you. It's as well to have thick skin, isn't it? I have very thick skin, indeed. Trafalgar Square yesterday, I did notice quite a few tweets this morning. BBG, Baldy, Richie, will you be talking about Trafalgar Square yesterday? I wasn't there. I understand the thousands of people turned out yesterday at Trafalgar Square, went to Trafalgar Square to see a number of speakers, including David Icke and his son Gareth, and allegedly, apparently, because I don't know, a doctor who had flown in from somewhere in Europe, Germany, I believe, and it was broken up by the Metropolitan Police mid-afternoon yesterday, which is not a good thing. I can't say any more than what you'd expect me to say. We live in a banana republic now. And I think I mentioned on social media last night, maybe if the protesters, and this is laced with sarcasm, maybe there's some truth in it, maybe if the protesters had taken a knee, maybe, and raised their right hands in a fist towards the sky while chanting songs about climate change, maybe they would have been unmolested by the assembled police. I really don't know what else to say about that. I wasn't there. I've got very mixed feelings about these gatherings. As you well know, because I've said this before, I'm not certain that they lead to very much happening. While I totally understand the good feeling that is derived from being there with other like-minded people. So I've got mixed feelings, as you well know. But of course, we live in tyrannical times when the police can weigh in. I uploaded to Twitter last night a very distressing photograph of a woman being flung to the floor by a police officer who is tooled up to the nines, you know, looking like Robocop. And there is an accompanying YouTube video which shows she was seriously assaulted by a police officer in riot gear. These are the times we're in. Okay, let's just go straight to the papers. I normally take a tune, but it is 4 minutes past the hour. We'll have a couple of tunes. At the front page of The Observer, Johnson faces revolt on COVID diktats as poll figures slump. According to The Observer, and we will hear about this in a moment, Johnson is in trouble with his backbench MPs who disagree about the way coronavirus restrictions are being imposed without consulting Parliament first. The paper says a cross-party backlash is taking shape. It also cites, does The Observer, an opinion poll it had carried out, it commissioned, which shows Labour is ahead of the Tories for the first time since Keir Starmer became leader. The Star on Sunday goes with a political story and not a celebrity story for the first time in yonks. We are not appy. Appy as in A-P-P-Y. You get it? The Star taking a look at the new NHS contract tracing app in England, which you have been encouraged to download to your phone, dear listener. Have you done it? And if not, why not? Good on you. They want you to download an app and carry it and leave your Bluetooth switched on so that you'll get home some evening. You'll sit down with your husband or your wife and then you'll get an alert from the phone to tell you to stay home. Or you might get a phone call. It'll tell you that you bumped into somebody and you spent some time in the company of somebody who has the deadly disease that is COVID-19. And therefore you must self-isolate. We are not happy, says the Star. People are not happy because the app isn't working very well, allegedly. Right, Sunday People. Scandal of the 500,000 long COVID victims is the front page headline on the Sunday People. Scandal of the 500,000 long COVID victims, 500,000 people allegedly living with long COVID. And the subheading is Agony of the Virus Survivors Let Down by Government. Survivors of COVID living with long COVID. Debilitating feelings of, I don't know, fatigue, chronic tiredness, not being able to walk from A to B without collapsing. Long COVID, according to the Sunday People. And the Sunday People says we are being let down by the government, those of us who have long COVID. Yeah. Long COVID, eh? Covers all manner of sins. Exposure to wireless radiation and other environmental toxins that we might be exposed to that might impact on our health can conveniently be put down to long COVID. There's no need for any proper research or any study. All they have to do is just make it up as they go along. Give it the moniker. Do you like that moniker? Long COVID. It gets into the lexicon. Before you know it, everybody is saying it. I'm very tired all the time. I'm waking up very tired. Long COVID. Sunday Express. Honours joy for NHS heroes. Well, they have a terrible time. I'm glad they're getting something because they have a terrible time. NHS heroes, honours joy. They're going to get MBEs, OBEs, CBEs, BBGs, BBCs. They're going to get loads of little medals. They need to be recognised by the Queen. Boris Johnson paying tribute to the NHS workers saying the nation owes them a great debt of gratitude. Yes, Boris, they entertained us by dancing around empty hospital wards with stupid fucking wigs on their fucking heads, all the while singing the score to HMS Pinafore, filming themselves and uploading it to social media, thus keeping the nation's spirits elevated at all times. They were under enormous pressure to learn those routines. I was in the Mikado in primary school. It took me nearly 6 months to learn a wandering minstrel eye. God loved those NHS workers who did fuck all around empty hospitals. Yes. Sunday Telegraph front page. 1 million young people need urgent help, says Charles. Prince Charles, I would keep my young people as far away from Jimmy Savile's best friend as you could possibly keep them. He's written an article in the paper, has old jug ears, and he warns that the virus and the pandemic is going to be particularly difficult for young people. The Sunday Times headline, BBC critics set for top jobs in broadcasting, including former Daily Mail editor Paul Dacre, allegedly. They're talking about Dacre to be the next chairman of the broadcasting regulator Ofcom. This isn't good news. Dacre is as sinister a human being as, well, I can imagine when it comes to free speech. Dacre wants to regulate the internet. We'll talk about this in a moment. Well, in a few moments. Well, in 25 minutes, maybe. Online harms and all of that. This isn't good news at all. Former Daily Telegraph editor Lord Moore, Charles Moore, has been asked by Boris Johnson to possibly become the new BBC chairman. That's on the front page of the Sunday Times. And on the Mail on Sunday, Jamie's war on toxic US food. Jamie Oliver is a chef and he's teamed up with Joe Wicks, who's a fitness trainer, and others to urge the Prime Minister to block poor quality food from coming into the UK under post-Brexit trade deals. Sunday Mirror. Donors compo for babies born to gay couples is the rather amusing front page headline on the Daily Sun. Sorry, blah, 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 the Sunday Mirror. Sunday Mirror leads with this story of a sperm donor. I never got so broke that I contemplated donating my sperm. And I've been broke, dear listeners. I've been so broke. Well, I've just been broke. And never went down that road. No. Anyway, this guy gave lots of his sperm to a clinic and they gave it to gay couples without his consent. He didn't want the sperm to be given to gay couples. And he is stunned. He is stunned that he has 9 children by gay couples and 4 by heterosexual couples. And the clinic has given him a 5-figure sum in settlement. So if you're going to donate your sperm and you don't want it to be given to the gays or the lesers or the dykes or the skikes or the queers, you better tick that box 20 times. Make sure they don't give your sperm to the gays. Okay, time for a tune. And this is lovely. This is Oliver. Hey, listen, do send me a tweet. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you this morning. Lots to talk about, lots to hear as well from Sophie Ridge on Sunday and Andrew Marr. Thought we'd open with this morning, though. Nice and cheery. This is Oliver, as I said. Good morning, Starshine. Back with plenty more of the papers and, as I said, the TV shows as well. Welcome to Sunday View.
Good morning.
Lovely, Oliver, and good morning, Starshine, on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Sunday View, live from Salford. What a city. What a place. Marvellous. Right, let's crack right on then. Hey, listen, there was a debate on the Sophie Ridge on Sunday show this morning on Sky. Now, when I say debate, it should be, well, described as such in a very loose way. Inverted commas on debate, right. Sunetra Gupta is an epidemiologist from Oxford, and she was put up against Stephen Riley, an infection... Oh, Richie. Sunetra Gupta, epidemiology woman from Oxford, was put up against Stephen Riley, infectious diseases expert from Imperial College in London. We were led to believe that Sunetra Gupta wants to end the lockdown and open up while shielding the very vulnerable, and that basically Stephen Riley was taking the opposing point of view. It was very poor, and Sunetra Gupta was very, very poor. I'm not going to play it here. I was going to. If you do want to watch it, it'll be available on skynews.com and Sky News YouTube channel if you want to watch. I was very, very disappointed with the performance of Sunetra Gupta today. So I'm not going to... This is not me being childish. It's like 11, 12 minutes long. I don't have time to get into it. She wasn't great. She didn't make that case very well. And I'm not blaming the presenter either. She had plenty of time. She was shocking. Right. Stephen Baker is an MP. He's a Conservative MP and he's written in today's Sunday Telegraph. The headline is Parliament must take back control of COVID laws. Subheading, the consequences of taking away liberty to protect public health have been devastating to our society and economy. And here's just a little flavour of it. COVID-19 remains a dangerous disease for those vulnerable to it. But it is now clear the position is not as catastrophic as feared. It is no longer appropriate to curtail our freedoms by ministerial decree, with only retrospective approval by Parliament, often after rules have been amended or repealed. Doubtless ministers have acted in good faith, but today's is not a fit legal environment for a democratic and free society. Parliament must take back control. Now, Steve Baker, Tory MP, who wrote that piece, was on Sophie Ridge today on Sky. He pulled no punches. Have a listen to this.
We're in an environment where you really can't know whether you're a criminal or not, with this much law coming into force and changing so fast. And that's why I've said this is not a fit environment for free people.
You know, being so you don't feel that we're being treated like a free people at the minute?
That's what I'm saying, absolutely, yes. I mean, how do people think that liberty dies? It dies like this, with government exercising draconian powers without parliamentary scrutiny in advance, undermining the rule of law by having a shifting blanket of rules that no one can understand. I mean, it's extremely serious. I don't think I look like a hysterical person to you. I'm saying that this is a very serious moment. Rishi Sunak brought up this issue that we need to learn to live without fear. At the moment, the public are being deliberately told that they should be afraid. The idea, I think the phrase used was that the sense of personal risk needed to be raised. Well, the government's been frightening people into compliance, and it hasn't been working. If you look at figures from King's College, the figures for how the proportion of people isolating if they've got COVID symptoms are very low. I think it's 18%. You know, this isn't working, trying to frighten people. And actually, what we need to do is all grow up and try and live a bit more virtuously, have a bit more faith, hope, courage, temperance, prudence, all those great virtues which actually make a society one worth having. So that's why I want government to come to Parliament, give MPs a vote before things come into effect, and let us share in the burden of decision and represent our constituents.
That's pretty stark, isn't it? Liberty dies, right? With this government exercising draconian powers without government scrutiny even. Liberty dies. Like this, with government exercising draconian powers without government scrutiny, without parliamentary scrutiny. Jesus, say it right, Richie. Yes, let me say it again because it's important. Liberty dies like this, with the government exercising draconian power without parliamentary scrutiny. Right. But she put to him, to the Tory MP, what cases are going up? Aren't these new restrictions necessary?
I'm well aware of the case numbers going up, and I'm well aware that this is a dangerous disease for people with comorbidities. But I'm also well aware that for people under the age of 60 without other pre-existing conditions, it is not an especially dangerous disease. And this is one of the cruelties of it. So I'm very interested in listening to your debate between scientists. Scientists are only human too. There is a range of interpretations available on the data that we have. I think it's very important that we're really practical and realistic about science in this kind of environment of uncertainty. And we have to balance the cost of lockdown, the cost of these measures, against the cost of the disease.
Okay. Yeah, against the cost of the disease. But it is a little heartening, just a little heartening, to notice over the last 3, 4, even 5 days, some of those scientists whom were precluded from television interviews at the outset of this scamdemic are slowly but surely managing to get onto programmes. The appearances might be short, the interviews might not be in depth as they should be, but at least they're getting on there to say, we don't agree. Lockdown doesn't work. And that's maybe a positive and a heartening thing. Thanks for all your tweets. A number of you attended protests around the country yesterday. Let me bring up some of those tweets. Thank you for them. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle. Good morning to Gail. Good morning to John. Good morning to Peter. How you doing, Peter? Good morning to Shasta. Shasta is grinning at the thought of me in the Mikado. When I was in primary school, in St. Saviour's National School in Ballybeg in Waterford, I volunteered for everything. Why? Was I drawn to the stage? Was I brave? Was I fearless? Was I born to perform? None of the above, but nobody else would do it. And I had primary school teachers like Greg Scanlon in Waterford and Paul Dillon, musical geniuses, these teachers, great guys. And we would do productions every year. We did Oklahoma. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning and all of that. And nobody would want to. I mean, you couldn't insist on the children taking the lead roles. So I ended up doing the lead roles. And I, as you well know by now, I couldn't and can't sing. But I used to do it because teachers would always say to me, ah, go on, Richie, you'll do it. And I would do it. So I played Nanky Poo. I can't remember who I played in Oklahoma, but I had plenty of songs to sing. I narrated Rumpelstiltskin Oskwelga, which is one of my greatest achievements of all time. I narrated Rumpelstiltskin in the Irish language, Gaeilge. What else did I do? I was one of the apostles or one of Jesus's closest confidants in our own version of Jesus Christ Superstar. I'm sure I did other stuff as well, but I can't remember right now. Yes. Yes. I will always, you can always rely on me. Hi to Dean Smith, who's a friend of ours. Dean was in London yesterday, and Dean, just in the interest of fairness, I'll say this, you can find Dean on Twitter. He's at DeanieBeanie19, at DeanieBeanie19. Dean has put some film on there. I'm going to retweet it, but I'm not going to make any comment on it. And Dean reckons that before the police steamed in on the protesters in Trafalgar Square yesterday, that it was obviously apparent that they were spoiling for action. And that is Dean's contention. Dean has been on the programme, a care homes operator, nice fella. And he believes that the police were there for a fight. They weren't there to police. Now, of course, the Metropolitan Police have said that they shut down yesterday's protest because the agreement that had been reached previously about social distancing and all of that, that this wasn't working. They felt that there was... Listen, I don't agree with any of this, obviously. Don't be shooting the messenger. I think the Metropolitan Police are Muppets. I have no time for them, and I certainly have no time for them steaming in and breaking up that protest yesterday. But I'm telling you what they have said. They said they shut down the rally because the organisers didn't prevent the social distancing rules from being breached. That's what they're saying. Right. I believe every citizen has a sovereign right to go where they want to go and to assemble and to congregate. And everybody in Trafalgar Square yesterday was well within their rights to be there. I've always said that. It is tyranny. I don't know what else you want me to say about it. I don't mean you, Dean. I mean anybody else. Good morning to Julie Waters. Good morning to Mimi. Good morning to Rebecca. And let's just take another tune and then we'll move on. Because it's Sunday. Alrighty. This is the BBG, not the BBC. It is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. My own website, richieallen.co.uk. And of course, triggerwarning.tv. Here's ABBA. Love this. Yes, ABBA and Chiquitita. Chiquitita from ABBA there. I also played Good Morning Starshine from Hair, didn't I? Shall I come out of the closet now or wait till the end of the programme? Maybe it's best that I wait till the end of the programme. Maybe. Hi to Lisa Cook. How you doing, Lisa? Richie, Trafalgar Square. A paramedic walked past me at 12:30 p.m. and said to her nephew, the police are going to kick off at some point. As soon as David Icke finished his speech, the police rushed the crowd in three separate lines to sweep through. The protest was very peaceful up until that point. I agree. It did feel nice to be with like-minded people in these crazy times in which we find ourselves. Peace, Lisa. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for getting in touch with the programme. Like I said, you have to say things 20 times because we live in this era of narcissism and self-obsession. The people only hear what they want to hear. I say over and over again, by all means attend these protests. And why not? You have every right to. And no doubt there's a spiritual boost maybe to be gained from going. I have no problem with it. But traditionally, the problem is that when people get back home to their community, to their street, they don't do very much. We need to do a bit more, is what I'm saying, right? Right. Gotcha. Next person who complains, I'm going to find you. And I'm going to... Nothing. I'm not going to do anything. Welcome to the programme. If you're just joining me, it's gone 11:30 already. We better crack on. It's at 29 minutes to midday. It is the BBG, not the BBC. Andrew Marr. Okay. Had Professor Mark Woolhouse on his programme this morning. Now, Professor Mark Woolhouse these days works at Edinburgh University, but importantly, he's also on Nicola Sturgeon's COVID-19 task force. Right? Right. Did you see the video? Jean Anne sent me a link to it this morning. Did you see the video the Scottish Government released on Friday? I didn't see it till this morning. It's horrendous. It's an ad that is presumably running on Scottish television of a young girl, presumably a student, coming to see her granddad and making him a cup of coffee. But in the video, they show her hands, which are clean, right? But they look clean. They show her hands leaving slime all over the kitchen and on the cup and on the kettle and on granddad's face as she gives him a kiss. COVID slime. Did you see this video? If you want to find it and watch it, just look for coronavirus Scotland video, granddad slime, whatever, and you'll see it. It's pathetic. Fucking L.A. Anyway, Professor Woolhouse, Mark Woolhouse, was on with Andrew Marr this morning, and Andrew Marr asked him about the binary choice. Opening up and accepting some level of infection and accepting that some people might die, or keep the restrictions. Andrew Marr posing the questions, then you will hear Professor Woolhouse.
Jeremy Farrar has said that we need a big debate about this and political decisions because it is, in effect, a binary choice, he said today. You either open up society and the economy, but you accept higher transmission, hospitalisations and deaths, or further restrictions are implemented now and you reduce transmission and reduce the COVID illnesses and deaths. Is it a simple binary choice like that, do you think?
Well, Jeremy's right to put it in tones of a scientific debate. I think there is a middle ground as well, where you could have some of both. And the way you find that middle ground is by focusing your efforts not simply on suppressing the spread of the virus through the whole population, but concentrating on protecting the people who most need protecting. We know who those people are: the elderly, the frail, the vulnerable, those with a set of comorbidities. They are enormously more at risk of this virus than the rest of the population. And if we can protect them, that gives us some wiggle room to relax measures elsewhere for the rest of us.
And I suppose, therefore, the next question is, how can we protect them and can we really protect them? Because the Prime Minister himself said this week, if you let the virus rip through the rest of the population, it would inevitably find its way through to the elderly as well. And Nicola Sturgeon up in Scotland has said something very similar. So can you really protect these people?
Right. Pretty basic, right? What he said was what Sunetra Gupta said, what Carl Hennigan said, right? Accept it. You can't stop it. So let people go about their business whom are very unlikely to be touched by this, while doing everything you can to help those with comorbidities. But Jimmy Cranky in Scotland and others say, no, you can't just allow the virus off the leash, as it were. What does he say?
These people.
Well, he's exactly right. But there's no question of letting this virus rip through the rest of the population. This is a very unpleasant virus. It can cause very severe illness and hospitalizations, even in the healthy population. And we're seeing problems with long COVID, the sequelae of infection as well, building up.
So long COVID.
So there's no question of doing nothing to suppress the virus. The question is whether it is so serious in that population that the right thing to do is shut down society to stop it spreading. And in that context, that probably does seem too much. But then, as you quite rightly say, it is very difficult to protect the elderly population, the frail population, if the virus is rampaging through the rest of us. The best way to keep yourself safe from this virus is that everyone you come in contact with is virus-free. And the way you establish that is by testing. But we're not yet at the position where we could test on a regular basis, twice weekly or whatever it may be, a very large number of people that are the carers of the vulnerable, the informal carers, the family members, the household members, and so on. We can't yet test on that scale.
And that's what they want to do. They want to bring in mass testing. They've said this. They've been saying it for 3 weeks now. A testing regime that we would all become used to, would become part of our daily lives, saliva tests to determine what bugs are in our system at any given time. And Now, Marr asks him an interesting question here about the attempts to deal with this back in March at the very outset. Listen to Marr's question.
Going back to the beginning of all of this, did the government model anything other than a lockdown right at the start?
Very good question. So when they were running around chasing their tails, telling us that a deadly disease was landing in the UK, were they looking at several approaches to dealing with it and keeping us all safe, or was it lockdown specific from day one?
Basically, no. And that is a worry because...
Lockdown was the only game in town from day one. This is important.
When we started modelling this way back in March, before the first lockdown, it was very apparent from the work that my group did and many other groups did that all a lockdown ever did is defer the problem. It solves an immediate crisis because it reduces transmission quickly, but it doesn't actually solve the problem in the long term. It doesn't make the virus go away. So in the middle of March, we were modelling scenarios where it was entirely possible that we'd need to lock down again in September. And that's exactly the position we find ourselves in.
That's very interesting, isn't it? Not only was lockdown the only game in town at the outset of it, but even in the middle of March, they were modelling having to do another lockdown in September. And hey, presto, here we are in September. Basically, nobody on the SAGE committee in London, nobody on the COVID advisory committee in Scotland was advocating anything else but locking everybody into their houses, shutting down the economy and all the rest of it.
Lockdown just defers the problem. It doesn't solve it.
So that implies that there was only ever one option being looked at by ministers seriously, which was the lockdown.
You did hear what he said there. Lockdown defers the problem, doesn't solve it.
The next question is, when they were looking at the lockdown, were they modelling the economic consequences of it and the consequences for other health problems of the lockdown?
Well, I've been told that they were, but...
No, they weren't. Don't lie.
This wasn't done in the same way that the epidemiological modelling was done. The results of the epidemiological models were up there and discussed publicly. They were very visible. They were heavily critiqued, as they should be. So we knew what we were seeing on the epidemiological side. There wasn't any equivalent, from my point of view, not just on the economic harms, but the other kind of harms that lockdown causes. And those include the drastically reduced access to healthcare provision that happened during the first lockdown. There was a tremendous fall off in people going to hospitals and GPs when they needed to, the mental health problems, and of course the educational harms that it caused by closing schools and universities.
Very interesting there. He said nowhere near the focus on what would happen to people's health because of the lockdown itself and the economy, none. And that's because I think you and I would probably agree, I think we've been together now, you and I, for a few years, because part of all of this, one of the gains, you see, Boris Johnson, we know this. This is basic stuff. Matt Hancock, these guys are not making these decisions. Even Whitty and Valance are taking their orders. The people who came up with this idea, the people who dreamt this up, want to destroy the economy, want to wreck the employment prospects of the generations of people behind us, want to destroy people's companies, want to force people out of their homes because they default on their mortgages. This is all part of the plan, you see. Hence, of course, they don't model for these damages. So we modelled for what the lockdown, you know, we modelled for saving lives with the lockdown. We modelled all of that, we looked closely at all of that, right. But we really didn't pay any attention to what the lockdown itself would do to wider society, from a health point of view and from an economic point of view. Why? Again, because the people at the very top of the pyramid, and it's a pyramid, because this is part of the agenda, the destruction that you're seeing now, and that you will see in coming months, as they've basically given themselves another 6 months until next March, to carry on with this nonsense. So they didn't model for it. And you couldn't get something like that wrong. You couldn't forget. It's not as if you're saying, right, let's lock down the country, close the factories, close every company, empty out the high streets, shut it all down, no travelling, no sports, no anything. It's not as if nobody would have said, Jesus, what kind of an impact is that going to have? Of course somebody would have said that. But again, it's all part of the agenda.
Speaking about modelling, you, like me, are probably just about old enough to remember the old closing times and the binge drinking that went in before last orders were called. Was modelling done about the effects on coronavirus spreading of closing pubs at 10 o'clock?
Really good question. Sky News and the BBC running videos today of town centres across the UK where pubs have been kicking people out at 10 on the dot. No last orders at 10 to 10. They've been booting them out at 10 o'clock. Right. Any scientific basis for this? What does Woolhouse say?
Not to my knowledge. And
not to my knowledge. No modelling done.
The models...
arbitrary balls, this, right?
...don't have the sort of granularity that you can explore in detail different closing times of pubs or even different versions of the rule of six that we have around the country, the differences between indoor and outdoor transmission or involving children or not. They don't have that level of granularity. So those sorts of things have to be judgment calls based on the public health evidence rather than the models.
Yeah. Judgment calls based on public health evidence, which is bollocks, because the public health evidence is quite simply cases. Public health officials at every city has a director of public health. Every single city in the country has a public health director, and he or she will say things like, oh, we've had a little bump in the numbers of cases showing up. Not sicknesses, not people laid low with COVID, not people in hospital, not even people with symptoms. So the cases are going up, so let's stop the pubs serving after 10 o'clock. Arbitrary bollocks that doesn't do anything one way or the other. And of course, I'm not even going to get into the problems with the PCR tests, which they've admitted themselves on national television. They've actually admitted it. Dominic Raab, Foreign Secretary, last week basically acknowledged that the testing is woeful. Matt Hancock, challenged by Kay Burley on Thursday, squirmed, twisted and turned in his seat as Burley said, look, according to the Times, many of these so-called positive cases might not be positive because the test is very unreliable. He was then asked about Sweden, was Woolhouse. This is interesting. Marr made the point to him about Sweden. He said Sweden could be an alternative, the Swedish model, because Sweden didn't lock down and, all things being considered, didn't do any worse than anybody else. Sweden didn't do any worse, so Sweden as an approach might be an alternative. Woolhouse.
We shouldn't be so binary as to say it's an alternative to lockdown. Sweden does have a number of restrictions in place, and I'm afraid I don't see a way through this for the coming months and even years where we don't have some restrictions in place. This is the new normal. We're going to have to operate differently until we've got this virus firmly under control. The advantage of what Sweden has taught us, I think, is two things. First of all, that it is possible to turn an epidemic around without a strictly enforced lockdown. And people will argue about whether or not that model is transferable from Sweden to other countries such as the UK, but they've shown it's possible. But perhaps more importantly, what Sweden have emphasized, and the epidemiologists there have emphasized, is the importance of sustainability, that we are in this for the long term, and the measures that we implement have to be ones that we think we can live with until the cavalry comes.
Until the cavalry comes, and the cavalry is the vaccine. He referred to the cavalry earlier on in the conversation with Marr. The cavalry is the vaccine. But I want you to just pay attention to what he says here again. I didn't drag this out. Have a listen.
Operate differently until we've got this virus firmly under control. The advantage of what Sweden has taught in years then, where we don't have to see a way through this for the number of restrictions in place. And I'm afraid I don't see a way through this for the coming months and even years where we don't have some restrictions in place.
I don't see a way out of this for the coming months and even years where we'll have some restrictions in place.
This is the new normal. We're going to have to operate differently until we've got this virus firmly under control.
Wow. Wow. Hi to Ian. Ian says, Richie, was modelling done on the detrimental effects of social distancing, sanitising the shit out of everything and mask wearing on the natural... Sorry, Ian. Let me read that again. It jumped off the page there. Ian says, was modelling done on the detrimental effects of social distancing, sanitising the shit out of everything and mask wearing on the natural evolution of mankind's immune system? One season's gap in this evolution could be the end of our ability to beat a simple bug, says Ian. Thank you, Ian, for the tweet there. Ida Fabrizio says, Richie, Brent Council health official asking non-symptomatic not to get tested. Allegedly, an official at Brent Council is asking non-symptomatic people to not get tested. Don't come and have a test unless you have symptoms. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Anyway, it would make sense to me. Right, let's move on. Lorraine says, Richie, I think the government should adopt the John Bishop testing strategy. Brilliant. He's got a brilliant video on YouTube. Do tweet a link to it, Lorraine, and I'll take a look at it a bit later on. Liz tweets, the either-or options both sound like old people will be locked away whether they are vulnerable or not, now and every year from now on. There will always be flu seasons, says Liz Jones. Yes. IT Bird says, the entire official narrative will shift to living with it, with a display of reluctance, because that is how they justify regular testing and the health passport in the end. That's where it's all going. Base Ninja says that his better half is currently in Gdansk. She's had the NHS message from the for the app. Yet me in Liverpool, no, I've not had it. Same phones, same EE provider. So do they want to test non-Brits only? Asks Base Ninja. Good stuff. 14 minutes it is, 13 minutes even, to the top of the hour. Let's move on to this then. Very interesting this. I published nothing. I posted a link to a story in the Sunday Mail today about online harms. Did you see it? Did you? You may have seen it, you may not. I've tweeted it. You'll find it if you go and look for Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You'll see the tweet to the story in the Mail on Sunday. It is headlined, Free Speech UK MPs try to ban harmful words from the internet. Right. This is the online harms white paper, which was published last year. And based on the white paper, which was put out for consultation last year on online harms, the government is preparing to introduce an online harms bill to create a brand new category of speech. Ministers' plans to force blanket regulation on online companies and websites to protect people from harm, from seeing or reading something which might be harmful. Not necessarily illegal, but harmful. And this is deadly serious. Very serious story today. Let's hear Sky News this morning. In fact, it was Sky News last night, very late last night. The evening previewing the Sunday papers, was Ella Whelan, journalist and author. You'll hear her in a moment. You'll hear the Sky News presenter first. This is very important.
Which brings us on to the story in the Mail. New free speech battle as MPs try to ban harmful words from the web. Explain this one, Ella.
Well, it's been bubbling for, like many of these stories, it's kind of been bubbling for a long time. And this is a new report come out by the think tank, the Centre for Policy Studies, which is looking at the government's preparations to bring in a new online harms bill. And the thing that jumps out from it that the Centre for Policy Studies has focused on is this plan to make a new category of speech that is legal but harmful. So in essence, and in theory, you could have an article or something taken down, even if it's legal, but if it's harmful. And it's that use of the word harmful, which is so woolly and so open to abuse. And Ruth Smeath, who's was a Labour MP, introduced Keir Starmer, was it this week, and is the chief executive of the Index on Censorship, points out the fact that, you know, you can't regulate speech in this way, or you shouldn't. It seems like the government is hell-bent on doing it, but you shouldn't, because what's harmful to me or you might not be harmful to the next person. I mean, what does that even mean? Harmful speech is an incredibly subjective term, and this is a... First and foremost, this is an attack on freedom of speech, of which we need far less of. We need to be championing freedom of speech.
Yeah, a government spokesman says, we've set out plans for proportionate regulation, which prioritises the protection of children while safeguarding people's rights and ensuring we maintain a free and open internet. Maya?
Yes, and it's not... you see, harmful speech doesn't mean bigotry or racism. They don't care about stuff like that. They couldn't give an arse if we were on Facebook and Twitter, you and me, and we're abusing each other based on our sexual orientation or our ethnic background. It's about people openly discussing things. For example, vaccine efficacy, necessity, and, you know, whether vaccines are causing harm or not. These are the things, you've heard it right through this whole hoax. And when I say hoax, I seem to be confusing people. When I talk about being very ill in January, I'm not being a hypocrite here. I'm perfectly, you know, happy to reasonably imagine that we've had a nasty virus of some sort going around. Maybe it's a very bad flu. Maybe it isn't. maybe coronavirus, maybe there is a coronavirus. Maybe it was manufactured in a laboratory. I don't know. I haven't a clue. The hoax is the claim that it is a deadly disease that is so deadly that we need to basically take your liberties away from you at the speed of light. That's the hoax aspect of it. Whatever the bloody thing is, I don't know what it is. But that's what online harms means. It means people discussing things like, you know, self-declaration around changing your gender. It means, as I said, people talking openly about vaccines. It means people openly discussing and challenging stories that come out about terrorist attacks. You know, you might have some things that don't add up. You might have some blatant holes, some gaping holes in the government's account of a terrorist attack, and you might want to discuss that online. That's where the online harms comes in. That's what it's meant to get rid of. It is specifically tailored to getting rid of that. Not about people screaming at each other online about, you know, their colour, the colour of their skin, I should say, ethnicity or sexual orientation. That stuff doesn't matter to the people behind this stuff. But open discussion of everything does matter. Open discussion where their agenda is being challenged does matter. And they will decree it to be harmful when you go online or you go on YouTube on your channel and you discuss your maybe educated, maybe considered, maybe measured opinions of the things I just mentioned. And they want to stop that. And that is huge. And it's coming right soon. And it's just going to come in, I think. I don't see any opposition to it whatsoever. I'll be back with you in a moment.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, Felicity sent this in. Felicity, thank you. I was in Trafalgar Square yesterday, Richie. And the reason the police riot squad proceeded to shut down the protest almost immediately after David Icke had spoken was because the German doctor started to speak. This brave man then proceeded to go to Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park with the masses following him. It took the riot police about an hour to reach them in Hyde Park. They then arrested the German doctor, who refused to get in the police riot van. I witnessed this. The police forced him into the van. I do not know what has happened to him, but you work it out. David Icke is not a threat, but the German doctor is. ! Says Felicity. Look, I've said this before and I've said it again. And it was something I discussed with him over the years. It doesn't matter what I think about David Icke or what you think about David Icke. It doesn't matter that I've read many of his books and I've gleaned a considerable amount of, I suppose, of important facts and information from the books. It doesn't matter that I like David Icke and that I've quoted liberally from his books, and when the opportunity arises in the future, I will sometimes quote from his books. None of that matters. David Icke never was and never will be a threat to the establishment. Ever. You've only got to look at the tabloids. David is the guy who said the Queen is a lizard. David is the guy who said the moon is a space station. And he did. What I think about those statements is irrelevant. The Queen is not a lizard. It's a ridiculous concept to me. But David believes it, and good luck to him. Passionately believes it. He's not an idiot, David Icke. That might sound very oxymoronical, that sentence following the David does believe the Queen is a lizard. He's not stupid. He believes it, and he has his reasons for believing it. But it means that 999,999 out of every million people will never look at anything that David Icke says or does, will not be moved by him, will not be swayed by him. So Felicity is right. It's a fact. There's no getting away from it. No matter what you think of him, no matter what I think of him. And this is why I personally would be staying away if you've got a doctor from Germany or an epidemiologist or you've got a surgeon, you know, working in the NHS who wants to talk about these things and explain why COVID is a load of bollocks. I would stay away from those gatherings because my presence ultimately taints, like it or lump it, what these people are saying and what they're doing. And that's not a popular thing to say, but I don't give a shit. It's how I feel. I've said it before and I'll say it again. And I lived with David Icke, lived with him. He shared our home, liked him, promote him when I get the opportunity to do it, when it comes to some of the evidence and stuff he's uncovered over the years. I've got no problem with him whatsoever. I never will. But the vast majority of people think he's an idiot. And they always will. Nothing is going to change that. There's no recovering from saying the Queen is a lizard. And I had this out with David when I presented on Talk Radio Europe back 10, 11 years ago when I first met him. I used to hammer him for that. Yeah, very good that, but you're the guy who said the Queen is a lizard, man. Ultimately, no getting away from it. And if I was the guy who said the Queen is a lizard, I would stay away from gatherings where establishment figures were talking about coronavirus and trying to give the assembled masses another point of view. That's what I would do. And I don't care what you think of that. Listen, I'm not playing that stupid song that I made the other day out of Shaz and Dave. I'm not playing it again. What I'm going to do is close out today's programme with the original. Thanks for listening today. Here's Shaz and Dave. And the original, There Ain't No Pleasing You. This is Some Tune This. Have a fantastic Sunday. Vernon Coleman, the legendary Dr. Vernon Coleman, joins me tomorrow on The Richie Allen Show, as does Stuart Waiton, PhD. Can't wait for that. See you tomorrow. Bye.